Hello, and welcome to the Mask Her Aid, a podcast all about taking off the fake identity masks we all wear in this masquerade called life. I'm Brittany Alexandria, and today's guest is a repeat offender. Say hello, repeat offender.
Hello.
Okay, so I have no idea what order these episodes are going to be in, but y'all should be warned, there's going to be like 3 or 4 episodes. They may go in order, they may not go in order. I might sprinkle them in between other people. Who knows?
Also, you might already know this from the title, but this is Shelby Lily.
Oh, right.
Hi.
I guess I just assumed you were going to introduce yourself.
I didn't. I just said hello, and then I was like, oh, I didn't do it.
That's why we don't make assumptions. If you know, you know. Okay, so today's...
And if you don't, you're slow.
I've never heard that before.
I just made it up.
But that's brilliant. I'm sorry for that really loud clap next to the mic, guys. Also, we have little children and neighbors. We don't have little children. There are neighbors outside.
Who have little children.
And there are neighbors in the walls. So you might hear a little bit of noise, but hopefully if it's the children, that's okay. You know, Jesus said, let there something about
Jesus
children coming.
Loves little children.
Yeah, there you go. Don't sing more than 15 seconds, otherwise I'll get charged. Okay, that's a great start, because this is going to be a rather deep or sensitive conversation, or at least at times. We are going to touch on a few things, and as you know, it's the masquerade, which is hopefully never a light topic.
Mm-hmm.
So,
good stuff.
Today's episode is most likely going to be called An Example to the Flock, because that's the episode... Or the episode, the name of Shelby Lily's second chapter in the book. And no, she did not get a second chapter because she's my favorite person. She got a second chapter because she plays two roles in my... Well, she plays a billion roles in my life, but like...
At the time.
Basically. She plays two main roles, and that's church leader, quote unquote, and friend slash sister, quote unquote, with a bunch of little subtitles. So... With the second one, it's An Example to the Flock, because she does a bunch of things at our church, and we will discuss that in a minute. But before we get started, I just wanted to point out how much I love everything about your worship leader story, or worship team story, actually. From the outside looking in, it's a lovely example of living in obedience while also taking steps of self-care. It's also about following your dreams, stepping into your calling, and walking in faith. It's been an honor to watch it over the last 10 years.
Thank you so much.
I hope I get to watch it for the next 10 years. So I said before we get started in the notes, I'll try my best not to read them, but it's either or with this girl. Before we get started, I do want to acknowledge that we call the position that might traditionally be called a worship leader a worship director, and I wanted to know, is that a compass thing, or did that come from somewhere else? And why do we choose to call the quote-unquote main leader a director instead of the leader?
I gotcha. I can't speak to if it's a compass thing only or not. I know that when I stepped into that role of worship director, I felt like it was... literally because there was some directing going on. When I think of a leader, I think there can be many people on the team who are leading things, whether that be literally leading a song on a Sunday or being a leader or somebody you look up to and you you like listen to their input on things. But as far as the director, it's kind of like, to a certain extent, you're the one responsible for making sure all of the pieces get put into place. And even though I have a great team of people who are all very talented and they're all doing their jobs and they're working hard, like at the end of the day, like I am the one who has to be like, okay, let's make sure this and this and this are covered. And so to me, when I was taking in on that role, like that's what was in my mind, is that I'm directing things. Certainly there are moments when I'm leading a song or I'm leading a moment or trying to lead the team towards a certain place. But for the most part, it's like that directory role. Kind of like, you know, directing a movie or something. Like, you have a vision, and you're trying to get it to, like, come out to everybody. That's what they'll see in the end, so.
That's fair. Especially with our worship team, because you really can tell that there are several people who might be leading things. whether it be the actual Sunday or it be just certain songs and things.
Yeah, we have a very collaborative team and have grown more and more in that over the last couple of years. So that's awesome. And that's why I say, like, there are many people who are on that team who are worship leaders or leaders. But yeah, for the most part, that's why I have stepped into that role of director, because it's like, okay, even if, like, I don't have, like, every skill set that I need or do it perfectly, like, I do have a vision in mind for what we're going to do with worship at Compass. So.
Yeah. You're definitely the director, though, mm-hmm. as we both know, because we can't have a serious conversation on a Sunday if you are up. And until very recently, you were up every single Sunday.
Yeah.
You've been less often up recently.
Yeah, I needed to step into doing some more of the tech side of things. During the pandemic, our tech side of the worship grew and what we needed to do in order to serve people that way through having things online. So there's a lot more roles that are happening back in our tech booth. So I learned quite a bit and just out of necessity started being back there, but was really thankful at the time that our team on stage had grown so much that I felt like, oh, you know, that's actually cool. I don't need to be literally on stage directing every single moment. I can step into this other place and be helpful in here too. And now to that extent, like, we've gotten a great team in the tech booth, so I've been able to take some Sundays off, like, not be up at all, not have a role that I have to play at all. So it's been great to have it kind of grow into that place where I am not, like, necessary every single moment. Like, that's not a healthy place to be.
As we learned in 2019, the last Sunday of 2019, at that time I was in tech until I realized I'm not at peace enough to handle the random things that could go wrong with tech. It was one Sunday, and everything that could go wrong did go wrong. Mm-hmm. And Shelby was last minute sick.
Yes.
So it was not only everything that did go wrong. It was also last minute decisions. Everything had to be changed. And there were things, and everybody's like, well, Shelby would know. And it was great and hilarious. And also, I think you would say it was sort of an eye-opener for a lot of people.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I think it. I didn't even realize how much I was allowing myself to be so needed and be the only kind of, like, person who knew how to do a thing and could do a thing. It's very natural for me to be helpful and to, like, handle things, take care of things, and I think that's a great quality in a lot of moments. But it was very eye-opening to see, okay, if I'm not here, I made it so that people don't know what to do because I never gave them an opportunity, or I never wrote it down or, like, showed anyone else that process. So yeah, that was super eye-opening and was good for me and the rest of the team to see. Oh, it was good for them, I think, to see how much I was doing so that they could be like, okay, she's the director and she actually is doing all of these things. But at the same time, it was also good for me to be like, I've made it so that, like, people can't do things without me here, and that's not healthy. You don't want to be I think it's a silo or, like, a place where, like, everything's centered on that one person. If you're not there, it all falls apart. That's just not a healthy place to be. So it was super eye-opening, made me start clarifying some processes for some things and start realizing, okay, like, I don't need to do all of these things, even if it won't necessarily get done the way, like, I would do it, or at the time frame I would do it, the quickness I would do it. It's okay. Like, it's a lot less stressful for everyone when I'm not there if I am not the one who always does all of the things. So,
as weird as it is to not see the piano player for the worship team on stage every Sunday, it also, I'm very proud of you. It shows so much growth.
Thank you.
I say the piano player for the worship team because that's literally how she was introduced to me.
Mm-hmm.
We met, maybe I've shared this already, I don't know, but you gotta get used to me retelling stories. We met 10 years ago almost, because it's May,
mm-hmm.
and it was September when we met, but I had started going to church at Compass, which was not Compass at the time, but at that church in August, and the friend who took me, Kat, or Caitlin to some people, she literally was like, you gotta meet the piano player for the worship team. You'd get along great. It's like, cool. But she wasn't there.
Super random.
Which is the weirdest thing, because she's always there. And then, because at this time I was alternating every 2 weeks between that church and the church I was growing up grew up at, because I was committed to something there. 2 weeks later, I went, and Paul, who played bass, I think, or guitar.
He played many instruments.
He played things. He played for the worship team. At that point, we had connected some, and because Kat was on the children's ministry team, she couldn't chat before church.
Yeah.
And so I would just chat with Paul, and Paul was sitting next to Shelby at the table, and he was like, no, this week, the second week, she still wasn't there. But he was like, oh, you should meet the piano player of the worship team. You'd get along great.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because nobody's saying her name. She's just the piano player for the worship team. And then finally, a total of 5 weeks later, they're sitting at the table, and I meet her, and he, like, forces us to give each other our numbers.
Yeah, it was very, like, you guys will be friends.
Well, he's like, this is Brittany. She writes song lyrics. This is Shelby. She writes song lyrics, too. Give each other your numbers. And here we are.
Yep.
10 years later.
Yeah.
And she gets 2 chapters. And so much more.
Oh, my goodness. It's been great, great 10 years.
Oh, well, thanks.
Yes.
It is. Anyway, I say all that to say, as weird as it is, I've seen a lot of growth, and I'm very proud of you.
I was going to literally say the exact same thing to you, so.
Oh. We're done. This was not scripted, by the way, this part.
We actually just really care about each other.
Yeah, I mean, it borderlines obsession on my part sometimes, so.
Everything about you does, though, so that's okay.
Every single day, I get my Facebook notification for on this day, and it says, Shelby Lilly. I was like, what in the world did I tag her in this time?
Mm-hmm.
10 years ago.
Yeah, there was a lot of tagging going on back 10 years ago. That's okay, though.
But hey, she stuck around. That's not my fault. All right. Now, starting with the conversation about what you most wanted to do with your life, or something sooner if you have anything else in mind. Do you remember the conversation you had in youth group or whatever it was with your friends?
I do remember this.
Okay. Then will you share your journey of becoming the worship director with us?
Yeah, so I'm like starting from like beginning of the whole thing.
If it's the beginning of that conversation,
yeah,
or if it was before that, just what was point A to, mm-hmm, point whatever this is?
Yeah. So when I was in a college group when I was like, I think it was 19 at the time, 19 or 20, and someone asked me what I wanted to do with my life. And it was really interesting because this answer kind of just fell out of my mouth. I hadn't thought about it, and I don't think I'd ever really like officially thought it, but I said I want to be a worship leader. I had never been on a worship team, and I had no experience, but that fell out of my mouth, and as soon as I said it, I was like, that's true, I do want to be a worship leader. And they were like, oh, well, like, have you ever done it? And I was like, nope. So I didn't think anything really of that conversation, except it did make me start thinking, oh, that would be really cool. And then it was a couple years later when I did find out about Compass, which, again, wasn't called Compass at the time, but they were looking for people to be on their worship team. And I was like, you know, that's something obviously it's something I have in my heart I want to do. I went to the church, went to it for a while, decided it was a great church, and then decided to join the team. And so I was on the team, again, just a piano player for, like, I don't know how long. It might have been like 8 or 9 months that I was, like, just the piano player. During that time, I think, like, maybe 6 months into that, that person who had asked me that question those years before, I had lost contact with them. But they contacted me, and they were like, hey, I am putting together some worship nights, and I need a worship leader. Would you like to do it?
I forgot you used to.
And what's very funny about this is this person had never heard me sing, did not know if I could worship lead, but had remembered that conversation they had with me. And I don't know who the heck I was, but I said yes, having never led worship ever in my entire life. And I prepped and I got songs and I went and I did it, and it was so awesome. I enjoyed it so much. Like, I had never done it, and I was like, wow, that was so amazing to be the one picking the songs and then leading through the songs. Because when you're leading through a song, sometimes it means, like, let's sing that again, or, like, you know, you kind of give, like, vocal cues, I guess, to the people who are there. So I just kind of did that naturally. I didn't even think about it. And so that was an experience. It wasn't even at my church that I was on the worship team of, but it opened that door of, like, confidence in me. And so then back at the church, I felt more confident, like, with the team that I was on, to start speaking up and start being like, hey, I actually think, like, this is how we're supposed to do this part, because I do understand music because I'm a piano player and have been since I was a kid. I'm a piano teacher. I understand theory and things like that.
And you were temporarily a college student.
I did temporarily go to college for music. So I started speaking up. I started singing at the church. It was funny, for a while I was kind of like, even though I was the piano player to most people, I also started being like the special song girl, because it was like we would do a special song every once in a while, but like, oh, that would be the only time I would ever sing. Anyway, so that would be happening. I was getting more confident, and then my pastor and the worship leader at the time, they noticed that I was the youngest person on the team. I was like 20, 21, and everyone else was like in their late 30s or something like that, and yet I had gotten to a place where I felt so comfortable speaking into it. They all respected me very much. They just were like, wow, it's like super interesting to see somebody so young feel so comfortable leading people who are older than her, but also with competence and understanding. And so they actually asked me then to become the worship leader. The worship leader at the time was needing to go ahead and take a step down. And so they had been thinking, like, what can we do? And they saw me and they were like, I think Shelby can do it. So they asked me to do it. And I said yes, having no idea what that actually looked like. Okay, so like going on with this, like I became a worship leader, and I will be honest, it was really, really tough. I felt very, very hard on myself about any time anything would go wrong. And since I was brand new to it and I'd never done it before, things were going wrong. There was lots of opportunity for growth, and other people maybe from the outside wouldn't have known that, but like I knew the things that were going wrong and things that weren't. Like whether that be like we didn't do a song very well, or the songs didn't like flow together, or like even the songs we chose just weren't like great songs, things like that. I just didn't have any experience. So
what's great about that is almost every time you had an issue with worship, it happened to be a week where I commented, oh hey, I really liked worship this yeah. morning, and you're like, really?
Yeah.
Great. I mean,
but I will say, like, I think it was, maybe it was bigger in my
and
head.
And for the record, I didn't realize there was a problem. I wasn't saying it
on
purpose. I just need y'all to know. I was saying it because I felt led to say it.
Yeah.
And all these years later, I realized, oh, God is, like, telling me to say this on purpose.
That's right. Yeah, I think more than anything, I was just really uncertain of myself and just not feeling confident in it and feeling overwhelmed by, for some reason, this desire for things to just go perfectly. And as I've learned all these years later, they will never go perfectly, and that's okay. So that I think that was like about a year, maybe almost 2 years, where I was the worship leader, or director, if you want to say. But I just was getting to like a place of burnout, and just was like, I mean, I was leaving every Sunday and just feeling completely just broken and disappointed about myself and about the experience that it had been. So I went to the lead pastor and I just told him the truth, and I said, I can't do this anymore. I'm really sorry. I don't want to leave the team, but I cannot be the leader. And thankfully during that time there had been somebody who joined the team who had experience as a worship director before. And it was funny, when she came on the team, she's like, I don't want to be the worship director because, like, you know, I need a season of rest. And so she had that season, but then I was like, I can't do this. And so we asked her if she would become the worship director, and she did. And it was so awesome. And it was really, really cool because I was able to kind of step into this helper role, because I did have a lot of those skill sets, which is what put me in the position in the first place. But I didn't have any more of that pressure of like, I am carrying the load. And so when she was the worship director, I actually felt like I was really a good support to her. And it was really beautiful, really healing. And during that time, because she had the experience and was more confident in it, I was able to watch and grow and learn a lot just through that experience. And so then a couple years later, she actually was going through another transition where she was like, I need to step out of this role. It was funny, like we're just flopping this role back and forth. And because she had known what the experience had been like for me before, she was like, I don't want to put that pressure on you. You don't have to do it. And I said, you know what? I think I could do it again, because I think I'm going to approach it differently. And so, so she took a step down, a step back in, and I've been the worship director since. And yeah, just, I think personally I had grown a lot in my confidence and in my letting go and accepting of, like, it doesn't have to be perfect. It's not all on you, like all that kind of stuff. But just had also just grown in like my actual ability to like in leading and directing and all those sorts of things. So anyway, that was a very long-winded story, but that is the story of how I am the worship director of Compass today.
But it sets us up great for like every point. And it's funny, I don't know if it's funny in a haha way or more of in an interesting way, but like y'all played off of each other so well. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know Shelby wasn't leading. Mm-hmm. For like I think it was a couple months in before I was like, oh okay. So you're not the leader anymore.
Yeah,
so it worked out well from the outside. Yeah. And clearly from the inside. So
it did.
I really like that story. It was nice to hear. Sometimes when you live in these things you don't get to hear everything. It's nice. Or live near these things, I guess I should say. So, at the beginning of the chapter, at the beginning of the chapter, I wrote about how often God likes to push us out of our comfort zones when he gives us what we need or want. He probably doesn't do it all the time, but he for sure does it most of the time, at least in my life, and as y'all will get to see in our friendship together and just in our lives separately. So how do you feel about that statement?
So absolutely true. I think that God, he just loves us too much to let us stay crippled in a thing. And we all have a different thing that cripples us and we don't even know it. Like something that wounds us, something that hurts us, something that makes it difficult for us to step into moments of bravery and leadership and moments of being kind and moments like just difficult moments. There's things that hold us back for different reasons. It can be what we would consider to be a personality flaw, or it could be something that happened to us when we were a kid, or just an experience that happened to us. And I just believe God loves us so much. He's like, it's hard because we see it in the middle of it, we're like, this is really painful. Why is God letting me experience this? Why doesn't he just fix it? But God is so all-knowing, and he sees you don't have the understanding to do that thing without going through this experience first. So he allows us to experience pain or discomfort or a season of like where you're just like, wow, like I have no idea what is happening. There's just no clarity at all. And they're all for different reasons. Sometimes it's to grow us to lean on him more. Sometimes it's like, hey, like you've been saying you need to do this thing and you just haven't been doing this thing, so you're gonna do this thing now. But he just knows that he knows exactly what we need. And it's so beautiful because I've said this statement before. I believe that God loves us absolutely and completely right now as we are, and he's not looking at us with judgment, but he loves us far, far too much to let us stay the way that we are right now, because he looks at us, he says, that's got some brokenness and some pain in it, and he loves us too much to leave us in that brokenness and pain, even though getting out of it might feel more painful and might be more difficult and might be really, really tough. Like, that's the deep, deep love of God, is that he's like, I love you too much to let you stay there.
It's a more beautiful version of a sprained ankle. I twisted my ankle again.
Oh my goodness.
A couple weeks ago at Carnival, which is like a rodeo in our town. It's a carnival and a rodeo in our town. I go for the rodeo, so I always forget about the carnival. Carnival part. And I stepped on a rock and I twisted my ankle. And it was very minor, but it was just bad enough that it's been like achy. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about it, and when I put it in a brace, it hurts differently. And I have to keep reminding myself, like, hey, no, this is the good pain. Like, this is the pain that's going to get you better so that in a week or two, you can go work out again.
Yeah.
And I finally got into a rhythm of that. I need to get into it, so I got to keep reminding myself. And I feel like that's the God thing. Like, he's like, hey, you want to do this thing. You've tried it. You already know it's going to hurt. And the reason it's going to hurt is because you haven't gone through this hurt yet.
Yeah.
But you said it much more beautifully. I think it's fascinating. And you basically already answered this question, because I was going to ask, why do you think he does it? Do you have anything to add to that question? I mean, answer, question, answer,
no,
whatever.
I mean, I think same thing, like, he does it because it's what we need to grow, even though us with our human understanding are like, this doesn't make sense. He's like, well, if you had God's mind, you would understand it. But if you had God's mind, you wouldn't have to grow. You would already be there. And he does it because he loves us.
I feel like sometimes, at least for me, he allows me to be in that space until I finally realize, you are not here because you deserve it. You are here because you need to realize you don't deserve it. Mm. So I think it's interesting how it plays out for each individual, both people and each of an individual season.
Yeah.
Because Lord and Shelby both know. I've been in the same type of situation a billion times in the last 10 years. But they've all been slightly different because I was learning something different.
Yeah, new levels.
That's like not the kind of level up I want to do, God.
It's hard. I do think a lot of the time we can face almost like the same sort of thing over and over again. You keep thinking, am I not past this? And it's actually like if you faced this one and it was the first time you ever faced it, this would have crushed you. But you faced a smaller version of that thing at another time in your life, which felt like it was awful at the time, but it was smaller and you overcame it through God's help. And so then you're ready for the next one. And it's again, like it goes back to wounding and things that we
like
carry
reps.
With us. Yeah. And it's like the weight doesn't get any lighter. You just get stronger.
That's fair. Okay. Sorry, I had to just think about that.
I had to think about that for a second.
For
people who are not like fit people, like workout people, like all the time, I feel like we reference it a lot.
Look, I try. I don't look like it, but
it's
I
not about
do.
Looking. I just like I know, no, like, we're not like gym people. We're not gym rats. We're like I work out a little.
To be fair, I would be at the gym a lot more if it didn't cost so much.
That's true.
And if I didn't get hurt so often, like. Also, to be fair, this is the first time I've hurt myself since pre-COVID, and it was super minor, and the main reason I'm even calling it a sprain or twist is just so that I can prevent it from getting worse. Uh-huh. So, yay me. So, I'm trying to figure out how to go over this, because we basically already covered it, but there's still some part of it that I want to go over. I think it's fascinating how he does the discomfort thing. Like, if you really think about it, our whole friendship, individually and together, has just been a bunch of discomfort zones together. Mm-hmm. Like, you coming to Compass was not a fluke. What was it? It was, like, weird. The
out
way
of,
you found about it,
out
the way
of my
you
norm,
did
yeah.
it. Even us becoming friends, like, it reminds me of two cats. Mm-hmm. Like, we're two people who just, in general... We're not anti-people, but we're also not necessarily let me meet all the people.
Yeah.
And it was like putting us in a room together and be like, you're going to sit here and tell your friends. And now we're like, never, never apart. If we're in the same room, we're most likely, or same building even, we're most likely together.
Yeah.
And for me at least, she's in every other conversation I have. Okay. I need to find my spot again. Okay, so one of my favorite quotes is by the Doctor Who character, Sally Sparrow, who's like in barely any part of it, one episode, but I love her quotes. And she said, "Sad is happy for deep people." Mm-hmm. And I quote that all the time because it is one of my favorite quotes.
Yeah.
But something you said in the book reminded me of that. And you said, "God has used the good and the bad, the joy and the tears to lead me here." Which, BT dubs, sounds like a great worship song. I'm looking forward to where he leads me next. There's several questions that are associated with this. The first is this still true, and do you still feel this way?
Oh, yeah. I can't remember specifically when we wrote the book, like what year it was.
We finished in 2018.
Okay.
It started in 2013.
My goodness. So yeah, I mean, obviously it's been a long time since either of those years. And it's still true. Like, I mean, what I have faced in
that... It's actually
that,
been 4 years since it published.
Yeah, what I've faced in that length of time, like, I've faced some really, really painful things. And obviously it's still hard when you're facing them, like, in the middle of them. It can be really hard to accept that, you know, God's letting you experience it, but always on the other side of it, I look back and I think, wow, look at all that God did. Look at all that he brought me through, and look at all of the growth that I see. And so, yeah, he does use it. And I've had some amazing, wonderful things happen in that time. And I've seen God grow me and all that through each of those moments too. And so, yeah, it's just the beauty of God is that nothing is wasted, nothing at all. He utilizes each thing you go through, whether it be a happy or a low point. And yeah, it's just really amazing that way, that he doesn't let anything be wasted in your life.
Two albums, and I reference things all the time, so y'all get used to that too. Or two singers, I guess I should say, because one of them has two albums that I've been listening to nonstop lately, because it reminds me of this quote, basically, which I didn't put two and two together until just now, Ann Wilson and Riley Clemens, because almost every single one of their songs are either, they're very much like Psalms. Like, they're very, I'm in the broken place, where are you, or I see you, God, or they're, we're in the triumph now. Mm-hmm. And so, if you need any albums or singers to reference for that, they're very helpful. If mm-hmm. I had those two when I was their age, I either wouldn't have appreciated them, or I would have gotten out of my valley much faster.
Right.
So we've established that it was 2015. It was mostly, no, that's not the right year. It was started in 2013 and ended in 2018, and a lot of your stuff was closer to 2018. When this was being written.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question is, where was your here when we were writing this chapter?
I think the here, man, if it was 2018, it would have been like kind of past some of those humps of like, wasn't the worship leader, was the worship leader, wasn't the worship leader, was worship director, I mean. Here I am mixing up the title that I'm always very particular about.
I think it was before you were worship leader again, because it was published in March. And so you would have written it either beginning of 2018 or 2017, something like that. Probably should have looked at the documents.
That's okay. I still would have... I can't remember. I'm sorry. But, it might have been around either of those times. But I think, honestly, once I stepped down and once it had been like, you know, maybe a year or two into that, I realized that that was all God led, and then stepping into it again was all God led. So yeah, regardless of when I wrote it, it would have been in a season where I was like, I saw what he had done. He had really brought a lot of healing through something that at the time I was like, this is the most painful thing, because it was very personally hard to go through. So
when you say it was all God led, you're saying the going in, the coming out, and the going back in was God?
Yeah, because I mean, I didn't just step down just because I was like, it's all about me and how I feel. Like, I mean, I was praying about it very deeply, and I just was like, God, like, I don't think you even want me to do this anymore. I just didn't have peace about continuing to do it because of the way I was feeling. And even though there might be seasons where God's like, you're going to feel a certain way, but you need to stay in it, I didn't feel peace about staying in. I felt like I needed to get some healing outside of it, which I didn't even realize at the time, like, I would ever go back to being a worship director. Like, at the time, I was like, I literally said to my pastor, I don't think I should ever again be somebody who speaks up front on stage, ever. And while it's not something I do frequently, it's still not something that I'm like, yes, I'm so excited to speak in front of the church. It's not something I'm like, I'll never do that. Like, I've done it.
I mean, she literally led two or three Wednesday things during the pandemic,
as
we were doing
live Facebook Lives where I led some little studies. So yeah, like, just phenomenal changes in me within that healing, which I at the time had no idea I would experience. So yeah, it's really done a lot.
Did not know that tidbit. Not entirely surprised, but still impressed. I think impressed is a good word. I was going to say something else, and I'm sorry. I forgot what I was going to say. So that might be brought back later.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a random moment, you'll know why.
Uh-huh.
That's funny because I was almost going to say aha moment. And where is here now?
Here now, I mean, same thing, like, since 2018, I actually walked through some of the most painful, like, things in my life ever in a different kind of format. I feel like that was, like, one kind of format, and since then there's been some other things just more personal, like, with family and relationships and all that. And again, like, have seen God use them and grow me and challenge me and made my eyes open, like, just about myself so much. Like, I've had so much personal growth in like the last year and a half. It's been crazy, and
it's wild, like, the most, because we're both personally growing at the same time, which doesn't normally happen.
Yeah, it's been a very intense season of personal growth, and but again, like, had this, the things I experienced within the last year and a half, or even like before the year and a half, happened 10 years ago, I would have been crushed by them, because I was not strong enough through God at the time. And so he knew what was coming, and he allowed me to go through the things I was going to go through, and grew me and taught me and comforted me through those, so that when I experienced them, although they were still painful and they still hurt and they were still awful, they still had purpose to them.
Yeah. Feel that. My infamous quote to myself at this point is, personal growth is exhausting. Mm-hmm.
It is. And it's why we cannot do it in our own strength at all. We say personal growth, and I think, like, we all get it, like, you know, like, yeah, I'm working on this, but, like, it's so, so important, and I forget this all the time, to remember to lean on God and be like, well, he's the one who's even brought to mind this thing I need to work on, because it's true, I've got issues and problems I need to work on. If I am the only person working on them and just keep trying to do it, I'm going to fail 100%. So I have to remind myself, God is the one who brought this to my mind, and God is the one who will strengthen me to grow in it. And when I remember that, and when I ask him for help, I see that growth happening. And it's only in the seasons where I'm just trying to carry it and shoulder it on my own. I'm just like, this is so hard, this is so exhausting. Well, it's because I'm carrying it on my own. So
even if you do accomplish it on your own, it's, first of all, worse. Second of all, I don't know how people do this without Jesus. Like, even if he's just an imaginary friend in the sky, like people like to joke about, like, I would much rather live my life and die knowing that I had some hope.
Yeah.
Even if I die and nothing happens, at least I lived my life with something there, something helping me and moving me and growing it. Now, obviously, I believe wholeheartedly that this is the truth, all of that. And I can't imagine how it couldn't be. Because when I look at things, like, that doesn't make any sense. But, yeah, I don't know how people do it without God and community.
Yeah.
Between the two, I look at my story all the time and I'm like, there is literally no way I would be where I am without God and community.
That's right.
All right.
Just made me think of thank God for good directions and turnip greens, which is not at all what we're talking about, which is, like, thank God for, like, all of the things that we need, you know?
See, I've been thinking people need people by Kane.
Yeah.
We're very different. But I really love that that's the song you thought of, because I've been thinking about that song a lot lately.
Yeah.
Every time I say thank God
for good directions. Turn green. You gotta say it with twang, or else you're not doing it right.
Okay. Look, we gotta add some light, guys. This is a heavy subject. In the best of ways, and sometimes the, I don't want to say worst ways, but the hardest of ways.
Yeah.
Which leads into our next questions, actually. What is the best part of leading worship, both when you're simply supporting the others with piano music and also when you're leading the song?
Mm-hmm.
Or songs.
When I am part of the team but not the main one singing the song or speaking, the best part is the collaborating, the creating something together. You brought your talent to the table and you can hear what you're adding and you're like, this wouldn't be the same if I wasn't here. And that's a really cool moment. But and this is going to be true for the second question as well, but one of the best parts about worship leading is hearing the people in the congregation singing. To me, that's like absolutely one of the best. I mean, obviously I love that we are all worshiping and that we're connecting with God, and like that part's amazing, but and I am so much more aware of it now than I ever was before the pandemic, and when we did a year worth of, not a year, but felt like a year, a very long time worth of nobody was in the room except for just the worship team. And I'll be honest, that was really, really tough, because I didn't realize how much we were relying on people's voices to help us kind of feel like we were doing something and it mattered, you know? And I'll never forget like the first Easter after people were back, and we'd already had people back for about, I don't know, 6 months or so. But it was the first like full room and voices were raised, and I actually got emotional because I was like, this is just like, it feels like a taste of heaven to hear everyone's voices lifted together and we're all worshiping at the same time. So that is going to be an answer for both of them. Like, that's the best part of worship leading for me, is hearing the congregation sing. But yeah, collaborating, creating, and like adding your part. And then leading the song, I mean, I love to sing. It's just one of my favorite things. I just love it. I love to sing
two songs,
my favorite kinds of songs. And
oh my God, add those to my playlist, by the way.
I do. Yeah, when I'm leading a song, like, it, I hope it never comes off that I'm like, yeah, listen to me sing. Like, this is so awesome. Like, I think I'm so great. It certainly is not my attitude at all. I just find it so fun.
No, you're very humble.
I just find it so fun. And I love just getting to add my own little spin onto a song with my my way of singing it. So, yeah.
For what it's worth, you're very humble.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Or at least you come across that way, despite the fact that you are sassy and sarcastic.
I'm very sassy.
I mentioned a playlist for the record. Mm-hmm. I have two playlists. I have one that's songs that are referenced, and then because sometimes we'll talk about songs in text message, and then another one for songs that are sung when we're together.
Yeah.
Normally it's one of us singing it, but occasionally it's somebody else, and so I put them in there.
It happens a lot.
Yeah, dude, I haven't even checked recently. I'll have to check. I'll add that to the end of the notes, let y'all know how many songs are in there. But dude, I'm going to bunny trail because I think this is important. Easter has been so different in the last 3 years. So there, for me at least, mm-hmm. and clearly for you, but like Easter where we couldn't meet together, like we've always done things just as a family for Easter, which was something I was prepared to be bummed about, but we've also like been changing recently because half of us are adults, but I wasn't prepared for how much I would miss being in a congregation on Easter.
Mm-hmm.
And like, so that year, leading up to it, I was like, oh, this is gonna be difficult. So I like made a plan and did this thing, and like, it was great. And I'll maybe link that later, I don't know. But then the Sunday after, or the Easter after the pandemic was just amazing, like you said. It was like, I remember being there, it was like, this is what it was meant to be.
Yeah.
Celebrating together. And then so quickly afterwards, this Easter, I realized, like, I think it might have been yesterday, that I was like, I did not treat Easter this year with the reverence that, one, it deserves at all, but especially after all of that. And I realized that because I was reading something in the Bible, I think. No, I was reading a devotional, and it referenced
Bible adjacent.
It referenced something, and I was like, I realize, like, I've taken this for granted, because you grow up with this stuff. It's not. Oh, it was talking about plot twists, and it was a Candace Cameron Bure devotional, mm-hmm. and she was talking about how, like, the cross and the betrayal and all of that were plot twists in the story, just not for Jesus, obviously, but like for everybody else. And I was like, I've never thought of that. Like, as a fangirl, you would think I would see these things, but for us, we've just known it our whole lives. We grew up in church. I don't remember learning that. It's mm-hmm. just always been a thing. So that's something I've been thinking about. Yeah. Just the reverence of it and remembering, oh yeah, this isn't normal.
Yeah.
So any thoughts on that, bunny trail?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say, like, the Easter of 2020, when we were just recording services, just a core team of a few people, we recorded our Easter service and then we all just left, and there was no celebration, and there was no people in the room. And I just remember leaving and thinking, this is one of the most sad Easters of my life. And this is the best day of our faith. I know it's like not the official day, but it's like this very special day of our faith where it's about the victory and it's about this celebration. And so that was deeply painful to have that one Easter day just no celebration other than we recorded and then we left. So the following one, when people were in the room, like, oh my goodness, it was just like, I remember many people cried that day. Like, I was feeling emotional. It was beautiful. And so I think it has helped me. And then also being on church leadership, and we've seen like the fluctuation of attendees and all that sort of thing. So we're still kind of aware of that up and down that still has been happening ever since 2020. And we're still affected by it. Our attendee numbers have not gone back to what they were before 2020. And that's okay. Like, that's not what we're trying to base all our like whether we're doing well, but we track it because it helps us make financial decisions and things like that. But we even see for like Easter and stuff that's been affected. So, and every Sunday, but especially on the Easters, like, I just don't take for granted that we're able to have people in the room and we're able to celebrate that together, because we couldn't have it. I know so many people face so many horrible, awful things worse than not getting to be in a room together on Easter. All I can just say from a church.
But we are first.
From a church girl perspective is that was hard.
Yeah. I remember this year, like, at church being thrilled and still feeling more than I would have normally. So I'm grateful for that. And also, like, but afterwards I kept forgetting it was Easter. And then just Tuesday, or not the other day when I read the devotional, I was like, man, it's great that you're super excited on Sunday morning. You remember, so good. At least you're not taking that for granted. But also, there are six other days of the week, mm-hmm. and 364 days of the year.
That's true.
But I just remember, I just wrote down to go look it up. The sermons, though, for 2020 Easter were amazing, in my opinion. Because I that Sunday, I literally watched 8 sermons live. Almost all of them live. A couple of them were later. And every single one of them touched on something different than normal and very quite different than the other churches had. And it was all some variation of, this is the closest we're going to get to feeling what they felt that Friday and that Saturday and that Sunday. It was really nice. And while that bunny trail was necessary, and I will leave it, we do need to get back on track. So, contrastly, what is the worst or hardest or most challenging part of leading worship? I couldn't figure out how to ask that question, so interpret it how you will.
I think it can become hard when you, as a team, you've practiced your songs together on Thursday, well, depending on when you do your practice, and then on Sunday morning before service, and then you have your first service, and then you have your second service. And hopefully, if you were a good little worship team member, you listened or practiced those songs on your own more than those times. And so, when you've sung the same song, like, I'm not saying, like, songs are great and we can sing them over and over, but when you're trying to get something out of yourself that many times, it can be a hard thing to do. And when you're also trying to lead people, like, it can be hard. Like, you can have a first service and you're just like, wow, that was awesome. We all worship together. And for some reason, like, you're like, I don't have that to give for second service, you know? So I think it's more just like the repetitiveness can kind of make you feel dry sometimes. That can be really hard. And, you know, I think the way we combat that is like, I know when I'm feeling that, I try to remember to talk to God and say, like, God, like, help this to be fresh and for you. This is not about these people, although I love these people and I hope that I'm helping point them towards you. This is about worshiping you and honoring you. And so I try to remember to ask him for help in those moments. So, but yeah, I'd say that's the hardest part personally.
Well, for what it's worth, having been in the tech booth for quite a while that 1 year, like pretty consistently, I feel like, at least compared to other things that I've done, it's fascinating because there is, you get some, at least from not performing, that you get something different from each of the four performances. Like, mm-hmm. I remember feeling something on Thursdays, because that's when, as you said, practice, we do our practices, or y'all at this point. And then feeling something different on Sunday morning when we were practicing to make sure everything was set up properly.
Yeah.
And then in the first service and the second service, both, and I feel that even still to, like, every once in a while I'll sit through two services just because I can, because Compass is my favorite place to be. Just one is a building because it feels holy, even though church isn't the building, but also just because the people are, you'll learn about that later. I'll have an episode. But it's just, it does feel different, which is obviously can be a bad thing at times, or maybe not bad, but difficult thing, as you said. But every time I've experienced, it's been a wonderful thing. I almost feel like we should all sit through it more than once.
Maybe that'll help the worship team if everybody else sits through all of it that many times. Be like, we'll all just do it that many times together. It'll help.
And there for a while, and I'll do it occasionally still too, but there for a while when we did start live worship, because I have a playlist where I like put the four songs that we sang, I'll listen to it sometimes. But I would just re-listen to it every day. Mm-hmm. And it was something different every time. So, whatever y'all are doing it well. And then, similar to what you just said, what you also talked about in the book about distractions. I'm not even on the stage, and I'm only in the second row, even after changing seats. So I don't see anything that's going on around me. But even I get distracted, which, let's be real, isn't super surprising, because I live distracted. But all the same, how do you ignore the distractions and stay focused on what matters and what does matter?
Yeah. Well, it certainly depends on the distraction. Like, if it's a baby crying, like, you just hear it, notice it, because you're going to notice it, and then you think, it's a baby. It's not a big deal, you know? You know, if it's a kid who, you know, they're old enough to know better than to be being a distraction, you might kind of get a little attitude. I'll be honest, you get a little attitude up there. But it's really more about, it's not a, like, listen to me sing. It's actually, like, in my heart, like, I don't want them to distract the other people that are in the room from what they could be experiencing in the moment. Or a distraction of, like, oh no, we put the wrong lyric slide up. That's, I care so much about the people's experience. I want everyone to feel like they can connect as much as they can. Like, if they don't know the song, at least they can see what lyrics they're supposed to be singing, you know? If our sound is not working and there's, like, distractions there, I'm like, same thing. Like, I care so much about people being able to have that moment where it's, like, it's kind of like a release for the week. Like, certainly you can listen to worship music on your own, and I think we all should, and have our private moments of worship, but there is something just powerful about being in the same room with other believers and worshiping together. I can't describe it other than saying it's true. It's just a different experience. And so when there is a distraction of one of those kinds, I mourn that for the people that have to be distracted and don't get to have that experience in the same way.
I mean, if God is worshipped in community, I feel like it's probably telling us it's a good way to be worshipping in community.
So obviously, like, they're going to happen, and you can't keep all of them from happening. I think it's, you know, without overburdening yourself, like, again, what you talked about earlier, like, it can't be all on me to make sure everything's perfect. It never will be, but challenging your teammates to do well, and to, hey, let's go back over that part one more time, make sure we really got it. Hey, let's double check, like, we got all these things taken care of, so that you can do something with excellence and keep the distractions to a minimum, because, again, we're doing it to honor God and to lead people to be able to connect with him in that way. So I think that's how you manage the distractions, is you try your best to avoid them, but also have grace for the fact that they're going to happen sometimes.
Grace. Very important word. Too important to unpack right now. As you said, on average, you are performing these songs at least 4 times as a group. Most likely more than that separately, especially because you're just a singer and a worshiper as an individual. Do you have anything to add on how you keep your heart right when it does get competitive and performative?
I think in everything, praying for a spirit of humbleness and just having like an openness to see those things about yourself, regardless of whether it's you need to have humility or you need to just work on focusing on God. Like, there's so many things to think about. Like, I just think having the openness, like a willingness to see the issues in your own heart, but also, so holding that in one hand, an openness, but also not like a almost like a too much being like upset at yourself for not being perfect kind of attitude. It's like you got to balance it. It's like, don't think too highly of yourself, don't think too little of yourself, you know. Either is thinking of yourself too much, because if you're thinking too highly of yourself, you're thinking too highly of yourself. Think too little, then you're again, it's too little. So these extremes are just not good for us. More than anything, it would be best to focus on God and less so on yourself in the general sense.
Yeah, Lord knows I know. Extremes are often a hindrance. So a lot of well-known worship leaders, when they talk or they lead, they talk about heart posture. And not even just worship leaders, but honestly just Christian leaders in general. What does that mean to you? What does it look like? And is it the same for everyone?
I think for me, heart posture, again, kind of having that spirit of humility where you are, when you're on a worship team and you are up front in front of the church, like, I'm sure it could be so easy to feel it like it's like a show, or like these people are here to see me, or I should get to sit in this certain spot, or I should get this certain, I've been here this amount of time, I should get this certain amount of respect. Like, I'm sure like many people can experience those feelings, and so the heart posture is like you are given this opportunity to point people to Jesus. It should be your talent should not actually make people think about you much at all. Your talent should be able to point people to Jesus. And if people are only focusing on you, I think you have a problem. Like, it's one thing to be complimented and say, like, you have such a beautiful, beautiful voice, and that's the end of the compliment. Or, your voice is so beautiful, it really draws me into worship, is a different compliment. I'm not saying people don't mean that when they say you have a beautiful, beautiful voice. But what I'm saying is, like, sometimes I can feel like somebody put on a show, and so they're like, wow, that person has an amazing voice. And somebody's like, you made it easier for me to worship God. And that's just a different thing. And not always the singer. I mean, we have people on our team who just add so much to it. And when that person can't be up 1 week, like, or that instrument can't be up, it's like, oh man, this song would have been so cool if we could have it. Or they are up, and we're like, that song was made by that instrument. And it's like, it's not because it's like we put on a show. It's like, wow, people were able to worship differently because that thing was there, whether it be a singer or an instrument. So
it's wild how different things feel just mm-hmm. from one little tweak.
Yeah. I don't remember if I answered all of the questions. You can repeat that.
So I'll repeat the questions, and if you feel like you didn't, you can. So I said, what does that mean to you? What does it look like? Is it the same for everyone?
Well, just like in all things, I think everything's going to look a little different for every person, but I can only speak to my experience for it, so.
That's fair. Yeah. And on that, we're going to take a little break. Hey, thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this content and want more from me, go find me on Instagram and Twitter at OGBrittanyAlex. That's at OGBrittanyAlex. You can also find me at my website, obsessivehope.com. You can find me on Amazon with a book of the same title, The Mask, Her Aid by Brittany Alexandria. And if you did enjoy this content, I would really appreciate it if you rate, review, and subscribe. I hope you have a great day or evening wherever you are, and thanks again for listening.